What we're going to learn today, it's, I haven't found this in a specific book, so I'm not teaching you exactly what the book says. It's something I thought to put together a few pieces based basically on a letter of the Rebbe. But in order to, I think, appreciate what the Rebbe is really telling us, it's better to see the things a little bit more wide, so to speak. So let's start. Maybe certain ideas you already know. I'm just going through them in order to reach the main idea that I want to really teach. Okay, so again, let's just look at the title. Bnei Noach and Shituf. We're going to learn what Shituf means. Literally means association. Can a person actually associate God with something else? Can you pray to an angel? Can you pray to something else, being not Jewish? If you're Jewish, forget it. You cannot, it's forbidden, it's clear, everybody agrees to this. The question is, what happens if you're not Jewish? Can you do it? So it's not so, so to speak, black and white, it's not so clear. So let's try to understand this a little bit. First idea that I wanted to bring is from the Rambam. The Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Spain, 1100s. The truth is, he wrote his book, Mishneh Torah, his main book, for Jews, not for non-Jews. But the ideas that we're going to extract from his book apply 100% to non-Jews also. It's not something that I say. It's something that's something I found in the books, certainly. Now, so I assume you know how to read, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. And I assume you know basically the idea, what we're talking about, which is that God is the real being, primary being, main being, and knowing this, this is one of the emphasis that the Rambam actually brings to this idea of knowing God instead of believing in God, which is in itself a whole big subject, which I'm not going to go deep into this, but the point is, we have to understand this, we have to know this. The difference, very basic difference between faith and understanding is that understanding is something, as the word says, it fits in your mind, you really get it. You understand it. You could actually explain it to somebody else. It makes sense in a very broad way. It makes sense. That's what you understand. Belief is something that not necessarily makes sense. No, you don't understand it. That's why you have to actually believe it or not, whatever, but you don't understand it. If you understand something, if you know something, that doesn't make any sense to say you believe in that. I'm giving a class right now. Do you believe in that? No, you know that. Because you see it, you understand, etc., etc. Belief, we leave it for something that is completely beyond our minds. Now, the Rambam says clearly, it is a mitzvah, it is a commandment to understand that there's a primary being. How to get there, what does it mean, the details. Okay, we're not going to go deep into this. If time allows us, maybe yes, but basically no. What we're going to understand right now, what we have to know right now, is that there's a God. Judaism is based on the fact that there's a God. Okay, point number one. And this is a very special God. Everything depends on him. Nothing. He doesn't depend on anything. Very clear and known ideas that the Rambam, Maimonides, brings, and I brought them there just to have to refresh it in the mind. Let's move on. This is also basically known from the Rambam and from the principles of Judaism. God is one. This thing, existence, as the Rambam calls it, that we understood by learning the previous slide. And again, I didn't go deep into understanding that there's one God. You can find rational ideas of how to look at the world around you in a very, even scientific eyes, and know that God is there, the one that orders everything. Okay, that's a different class, so to speak. The point is that this God is one, not two, not three, etc. He is one, and this is one of the things that we cannot necessarily completely understand. That's already a matter of faith. As the Rambam himself, he writes that this oneness of God is unified in a manner which surpasses any unity that is found in the world. Like, you're not going to understand it. I mean, not you, me neither. We don't understand exactly what it means. But this is what Judaism is based on. God is one. Now, the next paragraph is not really from the same book. Next paragraph, the Rambam writes in his actual 13 famous principles. The fifth principle is that we should only We should only serve God, nothing else. And I'm going to read just that paragraph because I think some parts of it are very important to what we are going to learn about Shituf, about this association thing. Now, God is, again, the only one that it should be served and exalted, etc., and make his greatness known, like published to everybody, like Avram did, that God is one, etc., etc. And we should keep whatever he says, his precepts, his commandments, etc., and not to do so to those who are below in existence. Like don't keep any commandment that anything else gives you. A star, an angel. It doesn't matter. Why? Why not? Like, they're powerful and great, and Rambam writes, because they are all actors by nature. I just translated it from the original Hebrew one. Actually, the original was in Arabic, but I don't know Arab, so whatever. They're actors by nature. What does that mean? They have no judgment or choice. They can't. An angel can't choose to give you something or not give you something. We learned about this in the previous class. So in any case, why would you pray to that? Doesn't make any sense. He can't give you or not, retain or whatever. And also, and this is also what the Rambam writes, it is also not appropriate to serve them as intermediaries, shituf, to approach him. Why should you pray to an angel to ask God to give something to you, or to do something for you, etc.? He has no choice at all to give you or not to give you. So it doesn't make any sense to pray to him. Only, finishing the idea of the Rambam, only to him should the thoughts be focused and leave all else. Like everything else, forget it. It doesn't really matter. So the Rambam is pretty clear. Again, this text is also written for Jews, even though we can extract and understand and apply actually certain principles from these 13 principles to non-Jews also, but the text itself was written with Jews in mind. So the Rambam is saying, Jews cannot have any intermediaries at all, doesn't make any sense, don't pray to anything else. All right, so we learned it from the idea that there's a God, from the Rambam, we learned that you should only pray to God, he's only one, etc., no intermediaries. Now, why? What's the problem with the intermediaries? So this is a very small part from a huge book, which is called Sefer HaIkrim, written by Yosef Albo. He lived in Spain also, around 1300s, the end of 1300s, 1400s. And this book is actually a very, very big criticism to the Rambam's 13 principles. Rabbi Yosef Albo says there are actually only three principles, which is a theme, a subject in itself. What are the three principles? And he wrote a whole book called The Book of the Principles. He thinks it's only three. And his teacher, actually, Rav Hasdai, thinks it's only six. So the student went even further. The teacher says it's only six principles. Rambam says 13. Teacher says, Rav Hasdai, that's what the name that was. That was the name was. He says six, and Rabbi Yosef Albo says three. But within all the book, it's a whole philosophy complex book, he brings these four ideas. Why should you only serve God and pray to God? Nothing else. I actually included these four ideas in the app, in the Benaneach app, because I think it's a very good thing to focus before praying, to know what you're doing, actually. So he brings, I cut it up a little bit, but he brings like the following ideas. First of all, you can only really ask from somebody that never changes. His goodness never changes. If you ask me, you know, one day I woke up in good mood, so you ask me and I give you. And one day I woke up, you know, everybody has good days and etc. And I'm going to say no. Whatever you ask me, I don't really care because I don't feel well. I'm going to say no. That's it. Bye-bye. Why? Because I'm a human being. You know, better days, worse days, etc. So if we're going to say the same thing about God, so it's a problem. Why should you ask me or whomever changes? The only one that makes sense to ask anything is God, because he doesn't change. His goodness doesn't change. Second point, he doesn't need the help of any other creatures, so to speak. If he needed help, his goodness wouldn't be complete, so to speak. Suppose, ask me $1 million. Okay, you can ask me, it's fine. I'm going to say no. Why? Because I don't have. I can go to the bank and ask. I don't think I'm going to do it, but I can ask for $1 million and give you, but I don't have. I need help to be able to actually fulfill your request. God doesn't need the help of anything in the world. He can fulfill his requests by himself. So he's the only one that makes sense to ask, because he really has the power to give you or not, whatever. Moreover, he has the capacity, God, of giving opposites at the same time. So suppose I need, whatever, a new car. So I'm asking God, God, give me a new car. And there's a guy over there that needs to dispose his many cars. So he's asking God, God, take care of my cars. I can't take care of this and take care of this anymore. I have 10 cars. I need only two. So take 8 cars. Do whatever you want and take from me 8 cars. So wait a second. I'm asking to have a car. And somebody else is asking to get rid of a car. So the only one that would make sense to ask for something is anyone that can actually at the same time do opposite things. And that's only God. And the last idea, nothing can prevent God from doing whatever he wants. And of course, any human being, any angel or anything a person might think he can or she can pray to, there are certain things in the world that prevent us from fulfilling our wills. As any grown-up knows, that sometimes you want things and you really, etc., but it doesn't happen. For whatever reason, it doesn't happen. Why? Because there are things that prevent you from fulfilling your will. But there's nothing that prevents God from fulfilling his will. That's why we only pray to him, nothing else. Any intermediary, as we're going to learn deeply, basically speaking, we're going to really delve into that. Any other intermediary does not fulfill these four reasons. If anything fulfills a few of them, it doesn't really matter. If you don't get the four of them, well, that's it. You're not an entity that makes sense to ask from it at all. Now, let's move on. Now we can understand a little bit more what is Shituf. In this particular slide, I know it has a lot of text, and there's another one with a lot of text. That's not a good practice, but I think it's useful to really know where we're standing. What's going on over here? First of all, what does it mean, Shituf? Association. Association is the idea that God delegates his power in something else, in a different thing, whatever that is. Call it angel, call it constellations, call it stars, I don't care. Call it whatever you want. But that's what Shituf means. In other words, Shituf doesn't mean, association doesn't mean that there's no God. We already learned there's a God. That's why I started with that in the Rambam. There's a God. He's one. He's the only one. He's the powerful, etc., etc. But maybe he leaves some of his powers in the hands of something else. Call it whatever you want. In the hands of something else. That's what Shituf means. That's the definition of Shituf. For Jews, I explained already this, it's completely forbidden. But for non-Jews, what about it? Okay, so let's see a few sources. First of all, let's go to the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch is a book of education. That's what it's called. The true author, nobody really knows. The tradition is that it's Aaron Alevi, year 1300, Spain. He writes a book with all the 613 commandments. I really recommend reading this book because you really get an idea, not deeply, but an idea of what the commandments are, what the Torah is really talking about, what does it want from a person? That's the Sefer HaChinuch. And when he's discussing the idea that God is one, he mentions this point. The commandment of unification of God, that we are commanded to believe that God is one, actually. He's the master of everything. He's one without any association. In what consists the idea of God being one? That there's nothing that is close to him, nothing that is comparable to him, nothing on which him delegated any power or any of his, let's call it quote-unquote light, whatever, holiness, or whatever you want to call it. So it seems from the Sefer HaChinuch, and interestingly speaking, he talks quite a lot about Bnei Noach, not using the word Bnei Noach, he calls them Umo Yisa Oilam, the nations of the world. And in many, many of the commandments, he says, this also applies to the nations of the world, etc. Like in belief of God, etc. But right now, talking about unity, oneness of God, he clearly says, nobody should serve God with any association at all. So apparently, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, I'm using the word apparently because it's not 100% clear. You could really understand it in a different way, because you could say he's talking about Jews. Okay, well, whatever the reason might be, apparently the Sefer HaChinuch holds that nobody, no Jews and not non-Jews, should actually do shituf, should pray to God or something else, apparently. Now, there's another proof, very interesting, that you could also explain it in a different way. It's back and forth, whatever. Naomi, this is a story of Ruth. Ruth was actually the great-great-grandmother of David HaMelech, King David. She was not Jewish, and she converted. Actually, the Talmud learns most of the laws of conversion. How does a person enter, whatever, the covenant, the Judaism, whatever you want to call it. How does a person become Jewish? We learn it from Ruth, from her, and her interactions with Naomi, which was her mother-in-law. Now, when Ruth actually wanted to go with Naomi to the land of Israel, Naomi tried to push away Ruth. You know, don't come with me. This is not for you. You don't need this. We can't do this. We cannot do that. We cannot do this. And Ruth continuously said, yeah, you know, it's okay. It's fine, to the point that she converted. And she came back with Naomi to the land of Israel, and the whole story, it doesn't really matter right now. But one of the things that Naomi tells Ruth, hey, you should know that we cannot do idolatry. That's what Naomi tells Ruth. And she says, yeah, I know, it's fine, I'll go anyway. Now, the question is, wait a second. Ruth, let's suppose, okay, we know she was not Jewish, but there are seven commandments for Bnei Noach, for all humankind. One of them, I would say maybe one of the main ones, is the prohibition of idolatry. Didn't Ruth know this? Like, why would Naomi tell Ruth, look, if you're going to be Jewish, you cannot do idolatry. Wait a second, if you're not Jewish, you cannot do idolatry either. So why should Naomi tell this to Ruth? Doesn't make any sense. She can't do idolatry anyway, Jewish or not Jewish. One of the answers, not the only one, but one of the answers is, Naomi was telling Ruth, look, until now you could pray to something else because you're not Jewish. But from now on, maybe you should know you cannot pray anymore like this. Not even this. You cannot do this. And Naomi says, and then Ruth says, okay, that's fine. The most famous, this is the last paragraph, the most famous proof of the idea that non-Jews can do shituf, can actually pray to something else besides God, believing that there's a God, but something else also, comes from, I wrote over there the commentaries, it's many places actually that say this, but to the point it goes so far that it's brought down in the Code of Jewish Law. Usually, the Code of Jewish Law has almost none, just very few laws for non-Jews, very few laws, because the text was thought for Jews. It was a very difficult time of history. Jews were actually persecuted, massacred, whatever. So they didn't, Rabbi Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, didn't bother basically to write laws for non-Jews. And this is a note in one law I wrote over there where you can find it. The text is in English also, so you can see the sources by yourself. And he writes that non-Jews can actually swear in the name of God and something else, whatever that something else is, an angel, or whatever you want to call it. It seems pretty clear that shituf is allowed for non-Jews. So we see a few places that shituf is not allowed. We see from other places and actually many commentaries that shituf is allowed. So what do we do in a practical sense? What should be the attitude, the proper attitude? So first of all, let's try to understand, and this we're going to spend a little bit more time to explain this particular slide. Let's first of all try to understand why would it be allowed? Because it sounds, apparently, doesn't make sense. God is one, and we should only pray to him, as we learned from the Sefer HaIkrim, etc. Why should we pray to something else? So this part of the text, I copied a few pieces, most of it, but a few pieces, from a commentary. This commentary is called Mikdash Melech. It's a commentary to the Zohar, in Kabbalah, whatever. We're not learning Kabbalah, don't worry. But the commentary was written by Shalom Buzaglo. It's a Moroccan rabbi, very, very respected commentary on Zohar. And he writes basically like this. If you ask yourself, why is it permitted for them? Like he's writing, trying to understand, why would non-Jews be allowed to pray to something else besides God? He explains like this. All the souls of the nations, like the non-Jews also have souls, of course, and they're human beings, of course, etc. All the souls of these people, the nations, come from the world of Asiya. Parenthesis, of course, it's a Kabbalistic rabbi, a Mekubal, and he's writing a commentary on a book of Kabbalah, so he doesn't really bother to explain everything. I'm not going to explain everything either, but the point of what he's saying is there are different expressions of God in different quote-unquote worlds. Not worlds like Mars and Venus or whatever, no. Worlds means different spiritual levels. The lowest of the spiritual levels is called the world of Asiya, actions. That's what it means. It doesn't really matter what it is, but, and by the way, between the parentheses, many of the souls of the Jewish people also come from the world of Asiya. Most of us, I include myself, come from here. So we're not saying anything bad about anybody. So the point is like this. The souls of the nations come from the world of Asiya, from a lower spiritual level. Again, some Jews also come from there. And I include myself. So don't worry. But the point is that it's a low level. And there is only a faint light of holiness to be found in that world. That's why for everybody, Jews and non-Jews, it's difficult in many situations in life to actually find, so to speak, God, find, quote unquote, the light. It's not so easy. You need work, a lot of work sometimes. Why? Again, because in this particular world, one of the qualities of the definitions of this particular world called Asiya, action, is a very, very faint light of holiness. And therefore, because there is this light of holiness that shines, so to speak, from God, therefore they must believe in God. Because after all, God is found and he's there. And if you really dig deep, you're going to find it. It's difficult, but you're going to find it. And even non-Jews can also dig deep, and you're going to find him, certainly. But, however, the flow of energy to them, godly energy to the non-Jews, flows from the appointed ones. He's talking about 70 angels that God, Sefer Daniel, the book of Daniel also talks about this, the 70 angels that actually rule over the 70 nations. It's true that today we don't know who is who and which nation do we belong to. It's not that I was born in Argentina and therefore there's an angel called Argentina. No, in the book of Daniel, there was no Argentina and no whatever, no United States, no nothing like that. So he talks about other kinds of nations, but the point is that there are 70 angels that rule over the world, basically, because God delegated his energy to them. And the energy to the world and to the nations comes from these angels, through these angels, not from them, from God, through these angels. Therefore, since there is some kind of relationship between the nations and these angels, therefore, each nation, each person belongs to each nation, and they are subject to them. And therefore, it would not be forbidden to pray to them. That's what these commentary writes. That's the idea behind, the mystical idea behind why it would not be forbidden. Is it a good thing? Okay, we'll learn in a minute. But at least we can understand why it's not forbidden. Okay, let's move on. Another idea of understanding this, there's a letter, I based this idea on a letter from the Rebbe, where the Rebbe received a very interesting question. And he answered this question through this paragraph, basically, that I copied over here, at least a part of it. The Rebbe received a very interesting question. The question is, to understand it, I'll change a little bit the ideas just to be a little bit more clear. But the question is as follows. Can we compare the honor that non-Jews can give, as we learned, not that they are commanded to do shituf, as we're going to learn in a minute, but they can do it. There's a reason, there's a logic why they could do it. Can we compare that to honoring parents? There's an obligation by Jews and also non-Jews for different reasons, but for Jews is from the Ten Commandments. For non-Jews, we can say it's a rational thing or different ideas. But the point is, non-Jews also should honor parents. The question is, wait a second, we should only honor God. Why honor your parents? The real one that gives you life is God. Even the Talmud says this, like father puts some parts of a life, of a child, and the mother puts another part, but God gives a soul. That's the main thing. Otherwise, it would be a dead body. So why should we honor parents? Actually, all the honor is to God. In order to understand that, that's basically the question that the Rebbe received. And the Rebbe completely rejected this idea. With the explanation that I wrote over there, we're going to learn it together. But first of all, there is such a logic in Judaism. If you see the Ten Commandments, even though they were not written for non-Jews, but you can learn it anyway, if you see the Ten Commandments, you find five commandments. The first five are from a person to God, your relationship with God, and the second five is your relationship with the world. Don't kill, don't steal, etc., etc. But there's one exception, a problematic, so to speak, exception. Honoring parents is between the first five, but it's between you and your father, not between you and God. So, wait a second. What's going on over here? So, the Ramban, Nachmanides, writes about this, and he says like this, basically. The Torah starts talking about honoring the father, and then the mother, whatever, it goes together. But you should know that your father is to you, your father and mother, is to you like God to the creation. And God associates himself with his creation, father and mother, in a way that God is your first father, and then your real, so to speak, physical father and mother are your second and last father and mother. That's what the Ramban writes. So there is such a thing as association between God and your parents. That's why it's not a problem as honoring your parents. Why? Because by honoring your parents, you're actually honoring God. That's the explanation that Ramban gives. So that's why this person asked the Rebbe, maybe the non-Jews could serve, so to speak, pray, etc., to the angels. Why? Because by praying to the angels, it's like praying to God. Because after all, who gave the power to the angels? God. That's the question, basically, the Rebbe received. And he answered, in my humble opinion, besides being a chosid for my Rebbe, he answered in a very interesting way. Because what we're going to see from the answer, that we're going to learn together, from the Rebbe's view comes out something interesting. We have ideas, opinions that say shituf is, association is forbidden. And we have other opinions that say shituf is allowed. The Rebbe is basically going to answer, you don't need to actually decide who's right and who's wrong. The truth is, both are right. And this is a very famous idea in Judaism. Judaism doesn't have a binary logic. The world, the Western world, is used to binary logic. Either one is right or the other one is right. Both cannot be right at the same time. And Judaism comes, and this is the Talmud is full of this, like a different kind of logic. One says one thing, like shituf is allowed. The other one says not shituf is forbidden. And there's a third opinion that says both are right. How can it be both are right? Yes, this is what we're going to see. Let's go to the answer of the Rebbe. The Rebbe answers like this. Look, don't compare honoring your parents with honoring the angels, a non-Jew praying to the angels. No. Even though the nations of the world were not forbidden, the Rebbe says clearly, he goes on that path. so to speak, not forbidden to associate God with something else. And it comes from, as explained before, from the Ramah, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Code of Jewish Law, etc. They were certainly not commanded to do so. Like, it's not a mitzvah. God is not necessarily happy about it. Does he forbid it? No. Is he happy about it? No. How do you know that? The Rebbe says, God forbid. There's no commandment of honoring angels or stars or anything like that. What's the difference between father and mother? Regarding father and mother, we were commanded to honor and fear them. Why? What's the difference? Because apparently it's still association of God with something else. The reason for this is understood, says the Rebbe, because the 70 ministers don't have free will. Angels don't choose, don't have free will, like the rest of the angels. Just the 70 ministers and the rest of the angels, none of them have free will. But this is also the same idea we just learned before from a Mekubal, Rav Shimon Buzaglo, Shalom Buzaglo, I'm sorry. Since the energy to the nations comes from the 70 ministers, it gives rise to their error, I'm sorry. And they were not warned against making that error. I'll explain in a second. And the Rebbe ends up saying, look at Rashi in such and such place. We're going to learn this in a minute. What's the answer the Rebbe is giving, besides Rashi, as we're going to learn in a minute? Yes, the Rebbe is saying very simple. Look, father and mother, after all, have free choice. You could choose not to have children and do whatever you think you can do, or have to do whatever, not to have children. You could do that in many ways. Angels don't have free will. So when a father and mother decide to have children, it's true. It doesn't depend 100% on them. There's many, many people around the world, and Hashem, God should help them, whatever, that want to have children and can't, for whatever reason. I don't know. It's not my thing. But if they choose not to have children, of course they're not going to have children. Of course God can do anything he wants, even if they choose not to have children, to have children. Okay, but there's certain ways that there's no way they could have children. There's a story about, I'm not going to go through the whole story, it's not a very nice story, but whatever. There's a story about Ben Azai. Shimon Ben Azai, he lived in the times of Rabbi Akiva. We're talking about a year 120, around 120 of the common era. Shimon Ben Azai was such a guy that he was so much into Torah, so much into learning, that he got married to the daughter of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva felt this guy was so high, he gave him his daughter. And I don't remember exactly if short time afterwards or the next day after the marriage, I don't remember exactly, okay? But whatever the case is, he went back to Rabbi Akiva with the daughter and said, here she is. Nafshi chashka b'toira. My soul wants toira. I'm sorry. I can't get married. It's not for me. It's not for me. So he gave back the daughter. He divorced or whatever. He gave her back. I can't. It's not for me. So there is such a thing as, okay, there's no way Rabbi Ben Azai is going to have children. Forget it. He's not married. So what I'm trying to say is that, of course, God decides everything. We got that. But the point is, if father and mother decide to have children, there's a possibility at least that they're going to have children. But angels, there's not even a possibility that they have free choice. That's why, even though God did not forbid the non-Jews praying to angels, he did not forbid that. Why? Because their energy actually comes to the world, to them, through the 70 nations. They might make a mistake on that. And God did not warn them about this mistake. Now, I actually went a little bit forward in my explanation, and probably you already sense some of this. I said that the Rebbe wrote over here, God forbid, we're not actually commanded to do shituf. And from this Rashi, as we're going to learn in a minute, now, actually, we'll see that not necessarily this is an attitude that God really enjoys. So, as we're going to see later in the conclusion, basically, we're going to learn Rashi in a minute now, but basically there are three ideas over here. Idea number one, shituf is forbidden. Forget it. God forbid it to the Jews and for the non-Jews. And there are opinions like that. Second point of view is Look, shituf is allowed. God allowed shituf. Is it wrong? No, God allowed it. What's the problem? And even we learned like a deep explanation, because the energy, etc., comes to them. Okay? So God allowed it. And then there's the Rebbe's view. Based on this Rashi, the Rebbe's view is, yeah, God allowed it, but he doesn't like it. Huh? Yeah, both are right. It's forbidden and it's allowed. Why? Because the fact that it is allowed, it's an halachic thing. It's a law thing. You're allowed to do this. But the not allowed, quote unquote, means God doesn't like it. And not only he doesn't like it, he's going to punish it. What? Yeah. Let's learn a verse from the Torah. Over there, Dvarim in Parshas Vayeshanan, the Torah says, Moshe Rabbeinu, this is a classical, traditional drawing of Rashi. I don't know if it's true or not, but that's what people draw. Whatever. Now, the Torah says in Parshas Vayeshanan, Moshe Rabbeinu talking to the Jewish people. And when you look up to the sky, and behold the sun, and the moon, and the stars, again, he's talking to the Jewish people. The whole heavenly hosts, like all the constellations, you must not be lured into bowing down to them, says Moshe, or serving them. This, your God, okay, Hashem, allowed it to other peoples everywhere under the heaven. Oh, what's Moshe Rabbeinu saying? What's the Torah saying? Look, Jews have God. Non-Jews, okay, stars, and you know, all of that is for non-Jews. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying in the Torah. Now let's learn Rashi. Rashi has a few points in his commentary. Some more important for us right now, some less important, but let's learn, it's not so long. Unless you lift up the eyes, thine eyes, whatever, your eyes in the heaven. Why would you lift up your eyes? To ponder on the matter, to think about it. That's what it means to lift up your eyes. Like, not just looking up, oh, very nice, the heavens. No, no, no. Think about it. If you actually entertain the ideas, to set your heart, says Rashi, to go astray after them. You really think of it. That's what it means, says Rashi, to lift up your eyes to the heaven. Really think and contemplate the idea of doing service to something else. Okay, that's the explanation of Rashi, first point. Second point, which the Lord assigned and allotted to them, whatever. Why would God assign the stars, the moon, the sun, etc., to them under the heavens, etc.? Simple explanation, very simple. To give them light, you know, to give light to them, to all peoples. That's what the Talmud says, actually. You need the sun to give light. That's what it means. God allotted the sun, the moon, etc., to the world. And then Rashi says, Davar Acher, I'll bring you another explanation. And look at this explanation, it's very, very interesting. Which God assigned to them as deities. I stress the word, but Rashi just says it simple, deities. God is telling us through Moshe Rabbeinu that God himself allotted, assigned, whatever, sun, moon, constellations, etc., for the non-Jews as deities, as quote-unquote gods. He did not prevent them from going astray after them. These are the words of Rashi. But he allowed them to err, to sleep, through vain speculations. Like, think about it, like we just learned in the previous Rashi, lift up your eyes to heaven, quote unquote, think about it, and you might make a mistake. Yeah, really, you might make a mistake. Why would God not, why would God allow you to make a mistake in order to drive them out of the world, says Rashi. Very strong words. I'm going to punish you for that, says God. I don't like it. But I'm giving you, opening you, so to speak, the door to make the mistake. And you might make the mistake. And if you, again, quote unquote, lift your eyes to heavens, you might make the mistake. Oh, yes, I'm not preventing you, says God. But if you make the mistake, oh, you're out. That's it. Out completely. And he brings a proof from a psalm, whatever, you can learn the proof. So we see from this Rashi a very interesting thing. And this is the opinion of the Rebbe, actually, about this idea. That's why I'm going back a second. That's why the Rebbe himself says, look at Rashi over here. By explaining the difference between honoring parents and honoring angels. Parents can choose, angels can choose, cannot choose. I mean, that's what I mean. So the Rebbe is saying, you know what? You want to understand what about shituf and non-Jews? God allowed it, but he doesn't like it. So we learned that there's such a thing as an attitude that God allows, but he doesn't like. So, conclusion. The belief of God, on God is a commandment for Bnei Noach also? Yes, 100%. Why is it not in the list of seven commandments? Hey, tell me this eighth commandment. The Talmud itself asks this question, not regarding belief, but in general. There are other commandments for Jews, for non-Jews also. And the Talmud says very simple. I don't know why, but this is what the Talmud says. Look, our sages enumerate only the prohibitions. They did not enumerate the positive commandments. Again, I don't know why, but this is what the Talmud says. So this is one of them, belief in God. Is it a commandment? And I mean with the full meaning of the word. Commandment means God is telling you to do such and such thing. Is it a commandment for Bnei Noach? Yes. In what consists the commandment of believing in God, thinking about Him, and going as deep as you can, as deep as your mind can go, in understanding, and I stress this word, understanding from the Rambam, it's not my word, Leida, you should know that there's one existence, etc. And in order to understand that, you have to learn Torah, how Torah understands God, etc., etc. Okay, that's point number one. Now, this belief includes many things. It's not just saying, okay, there's a God. No, there's much more to that. And I just brought a few examples that I took from this other book, Sefer Mitzvot Hashem, very interesting book. He says, for instance, non-Jews should believe in unity also. We can argue later, believe, understand, okay, that's a different thing, but basically this belief in God includes many things. What? Unity. There's only one God, and His unity is in a way that nobody can understand His unity, etc., etc. The world, it's a new thing, it's a created thing. The world is not eternal. The world is not like science. Some scientists want to say, some of them, not all of them, that the world is eternal, the universe is eternal, etc. No. One of the details within the mitzvah, the commandment with the full word mitzvah from God, order, etc., to non-Jews is to believe in the renewal of the world. The creation, something from nothing, he brings. Like, there's no primordial, eternal matter that God made the world from. No. God made the world something from nothing. Punishment and reward. God punishes bad behavior, rewards good behavior. It's one of the principles of Judaism also. Divine providence. God takes care of every single creature in the world. And if you learn actually Hasidus, the Hasidic thought, it goes really deep. The Baal Shem Tov had a very, very interesting opinion on what it means, divine providence, and this applies also to non-Jews. So these are a few details that this mitzvah, this commandment of believing in God includes. Now, what about shituf? Again, some opinions will tell you it's forbidden. Some opinions will tell you it's allowed, and it's very interesting that Hasidus quotes in most of the places the opinion that says it is allowed. And the Rebbe brings as far as I understand it, the way I understand it is, it's a genius view about it. Both are right. Why? It is allowed, but it's not a behavior that God likes at all. And not only God doesn't like it, He'll punish whomever goes on this path, so to speak.